Friday, September 6th. King Carol abdicated today. The new king of Romania is his 18-year-old son, Michael. The government, however, is in the hands of the premier, General Antonescu. He was sworn in yesterday by Carol. Diplomats in Bucharest said Carol was forced to abdicate because of the loss of Transylvania and the humiliation of his army, which apparently wanted to resist the territorial surrender to Hungary. There were unconfirmed reports that Carol had been arrested. Other reports said Iron Guard members had asked that Carol be allowed to escape by private plane. Now the news direct from London and Berlin. Afterwards, an analysis by Linton Wells from New York. First, Larry Lesser reporting from London. Go ahead, London.
This is London.
A tired London after the longest night alarm of the war. They're reading here about King Carol's resignation in favor of his 18-year-old son, Michael. Doesn't seem to make much difference to them, though, because from shortly after 9 o'clock last night until a little before 5 this morning, most London residents were underground on hard wooden benches. Overhead throughout the night, they heard the buzzing of German planes like so many angry mosquitoes. For the first time, the raiders were believed to have dropped the so-called Molotov breadbasket, containers holding hundreds of incendiary bombs, which scatter in midair, throwing the firebombs over a wide area. The all-clear sounded in London just as dawn began to brighten the east. But no sooner had the citizens of this world's largest city turned over for their first night's rest than the siren sounded again, only 25 minutes after the previous all-clear. And then later this morning, as sleepy Londoners piled on the buses and subways to go to the city, the sirens again stalled traffic and sent them to cover instead of to work. The official statement regarding last night's raids tells us that enemy aircraft, operating singly or in small formations, attacked this country during most of last night. In the London area, high explosive and incendiary bombs were dropped, doing some damage and causing a number of casualties. A large London public shelter, a hospital in Kent, and a railway station in an eastern suburb were among the objects hit last night, we're told. Many of you must be wondering what it's like to live under the threat of so many air raid alarms. It's pretty wearing on all of us. I'll give you an idea of what it was like yesterday for me. An average day. The air raid sirens got me up for breakfast yesterday, and I ate some oatmeal, drank a pot of tea with some toast, jam, and all the butter I wanted. The meal cost me about 40 cents. The elevator man in my house advised me to follow his method of stuffing his ears with cotton at night to keep out the sound of sirens and anti-aircraft bursts. By the time I reached the office, Edward Morrow, Columbia's European chief, was busy preparing yesterday morning's broadcast. He looked up at me tiredly and asked how I slept. Then the siren sounded again. Many of the people in this office building went downstairs to the shelter, but just about as many continued their work. However, the doors of the building were shut to prevent anyone from wandering into the open offices and filching something in the absence of the people underground. I walked to the post office to buy some stamps, but found the post office closed, everyone taking cover. It was about midday. I decided to eat lunch, but restaurant after restaurant had closed their doors. They wouldn't serve any more food to the customers inside, and they declined to let any more people in for fear of overcrowding their own shelters. I went to Broadcasting House. Passed through a wire enclosure after showing my pass. Walked past a number of soldiers with rifles and bayonets. And then down two flights of stairs, opening and closing the gas-proof doors behind me. I was pretty hungry by the time the all-clear sounded, but the restaurants were open, and I lunched on a steak and kidney pie, bread and butter and salad. 60 cents. During the afternoon, I showed my pass, a different one each time, and visited the British Air Ministry and the Ministry of Information. Incidentally, we have to carry around so many passes here that a member of the press or broadcasting is immediately recognizable in London by the large bulge over his right side, that extra big wallet containing his passes. Eric Sivaride, returning tired from spending a night in an air raid shelter on the Thames estuary, had dinner with me. He ate a large steak. I dined on a mixed grill, kidneys, sausage, mushrooms, and tomatoes. It cost us about $1 a piece. We had coffee, good coffee. But we had to ask the waiter for sugar. He got a bowl out of a cupboard. We each took one piece, and he carefully put the bowl back in the cupboard, awaiting the next diner. We took a taxi to the broadcasting studio, and after the broadcast, we walked through the blackout streets to the home of Edward R. Morrow. As soon as we got there, the booming of anti-aircraft guns began. So we put on our tin hats and went up to the roof. It was about 1 a.m. All through the night, we slept fitfully. Returning now to CBS in New York.
That was Larry Lesser reporting from London. Here's a dispatch from Rome. An Italian high command communique says that British airplanes raided Turin during the night. It says some damage was caused and the freight cars in the railroad yards were set afire. Now the news direct from Berlin.
This is Berlin. We have a news bulletin from the day and day this morning about the aerial activities of German bombers and fighter planes. We are told the German planes started off the day with attacks on military objectives in the south of England this morning. The Germans state that they encountered British fighter planes, but were able to penetrate the defense forces and accomplish their missions. However, at this moment, we have no further details. You have the interesting news from Romania. The King Carol has again abdicated his soul in favor of his son, Michael. His son, Michael, will be 19 in October. The former king is reported here to be leaving for exile in Switzerland. And there are a few follow-up items. For instance, the new premier, Mr. Antonescu, is now officially titled the leader of the Romanian state, or what is left of it. Hungarian troops, according to reports written in Berlin, are now starting to occupy parts of Transylvania, ceded by Romania to Hungary in Vienna last week. The leader of the Romanian youth organization, Monsieur Sidorici, arrived in Berlin yesterday. He is here as a guest of his German colleagues, according to the Day and Day reports this morning. And another item about the Balkans. There's a story here that important conferences were held yesterday at Craiova between the Bulgarian and Romanian delegates. The last Romanian proposal was studied, and the Bulgarians have now forwarded them to their government. It is expected that the final agreement will be signed today. And if this goes according to schedule, then Romania may surrender another slice of territory, this time the Dobruja, a province which lies along the Black Sea in the southeast corner of Romania. But in Berlin, we do not have as yet a clear picture of the future geography of the Balkans. Last night, we had another air raid around Berlin. By comparison with previous British air raids, this one wasn't much. There was little anti-aircraft firing while it lasted. The Germans say this morning that their anti-aircraft fire was able to drive off the invading planes. However, the raid provided me with a few interesting sidelights. For instance, I discovered that we can get an advanced tip-off that a raid is coming by watching the fire department flux. Some minutes before the siren sound, they can be seen racing through the streets. They carry the air raid wardens to their respective posts. Then they get ready for action themselves. And last night during the raid, I was in the Berlin nightclub when the siren sounded. Incidentally, there's not a great deal of nightlife in Berlin these days. The place is closed at 1 o'clock, and there's no dancing permitted. When the alarm sounded, the raiders informed the guests of the fact. One couldn't hear the siren itself. And he also told them that if they cared, they could order another drink. So business went on as usual, and the band continued to play. A few of the guests left their tables for the air raid shelter in the basement. There was no compulsion on the part of the management. The basement shelter proved to be just another underground section of the nightclub itself. And both on the first floor and in the basement, the parties continued their play. That seems to be the rule here. That if one is caught in a nightclub or cafe, when the alarm sounds, why, he just stays there. The places can continue to serve food or drinks for the period of the alarm. And then when it is over, there's a grand rush for taxis and buses. Everybody wants to get home as soon as possible. There are a few items of news from Holland. The German authorities have broken up the Freemasonry organizations in the Netherlands. All the lodges have been disbanded. Then there is a military decree ordering a complete blackout for all of Holland. And in enforcing this decree, the German authorities have arrested 190 violators in The Hague alone, according to a report in the Deutsche Zeitung in the Netherlands. This is Edward Hartwich, a lieutenant out of Columbia in New York.
And here in New York is Linton Wells with more news and his analysis of recent developments. Mr. Wells.
As Larry Lesser and Edwin Hartridge, our London and Berlin correspondents, told us a few minutes ago, another king has been toppled from his throne. This time it is Carol, hereditary ruler of that turbulent, gruff Tarkian country known as Romania. And the son, Prince Michael, whom he deposed 10 years ago, has been sworn in to succeed him. It was less than 5 hours ago. The last Hohenzollern on a European throne, Carol, playboy, dictator, and pawn, during one of the worst eras of Balkan intrigue, fell a victim to power politics and signed his abdication papers just 9 hours ago. As our correspondent Spencer Williams reported from Bucharest last night, after a day of serious rioting in the Romanian capital. Carroll's farewell message to his people said he was making this sacrifice for the salvation of Romania, or what is left of it, which is precious little. Actually, Carroll's abdication will probably result in Romania's disappearance from the map of Europe as a government entity and transform its remains into a Nazi vassal state with 18-year-old King Michael as a mere figurehead. Moreover, it can only be interpreted as a Nazi-inspired move to circumvent further penetration by Soviet Russia into Romania, following Hitler's and Mussolini's dictated restoration of Transylvania to Hungary. Incidentally, the Hungarians began to occupy Transylvania a few hours ago, with German troops hovering in the background to back them up in the event of further opposition by the angry Transylvanians. Hitler's instrument in forcing Carroll off the throne was General Ion Antonescu, a tough pro-Nazi army man known as the Red Dog, whom Carroll placed under technical arrest 2 months ago for opposing the forced cession of Bessarabia and northern Bukovina to Russia. General Antonescu was released last Saturday, and as unrest increased throughout Romania over the territorial surrender of Transylvania and another threatened Russian invasion, Carroll surrendered his dictatorial powers to Antonescu yesterday. Still, the anti-Semitic pro-Nazi Iron Guard was not content. So after long hours of conferences yesterday and last night, Carroll was forced to abdicate. There are rumors that the former king is under arrest, and contrarily, that he is free and will be permitted to find exile in Switzerland. None of these is confirmed, but it's probable he will be exiled if he isn't assassinated first. However, Carroll's red-haired Jewish mistress, Madame Lupescu, for whom he renounced the throne on January 1st, 1926, apparently has fled to safety. Young King Michael will, of course, become nothing more than a symbol of the Hohenzollern dynasty, with General Antonescu and the Iron Guard ruling under Berlin's direction. In this respect, his position will be little different from what it was during his 3 years as king under a regency, from July 1927 to June 8, 1930. When his father returned from exile and after a coup d'etat forced his son's abdication. The young king is in his 19th year and a nice youngster with, I think, considerable ability. When he was a boy king, I went to Romania at the invitation of his late grandmother, Queen Marie, and spent a week with him at Tenaya Palace outside Bucharest. As a present, I took with me an electric railway, the first he'd ever seen, and I never saw a youngster enjoy anything more. We spent hours together on our stomachs in the palace ballroom, operating and occasionally wrecking express, local, and freight trains. And the young king was so pleased that he ordered his regents to award me a handsome decoration when I was leaving. Several years later, after he was dethroned, I saw Michael and his mother, the former Princess Helen of Greece, who incidentally is reported to be returning to Bucharest. Well, that was in London, and he told me that he still had the railway and enjoyed operating it. Perhaps when the world returns to sanity and the map of Europe is rearranged again, Michael will be able to rule his people and probably do a pretty good job. In the meantime, uneasy will lie the head that wears the Romanian crown. According to information from Cairo, the British Navy and Air Force are engaged in an intensive drive against the Italians on an 1,100-mile Mediterranean front, the biggest of the Italo-British War. Italian airplane bases in Sardinia, which lie between Italy and Spain, and aerodromes all along the coast of Italian Libya have been and are being bombed by British aircraft, while the Air Force and Navy are hammering away at Italy's Dodecanese Islands in the eastern Mediterranean, and submarines have successfully attacked Italian warships. Japanese official circles continue to maintain discreet silence regarding Secretary of State Hull's blunt warning of Wednesday, insisting that the Nipponese respect the territorial integrity of French Indochina. Moreover, nothing official is known concerning future Japanese action with respect to the French colony. However, from Hong Kong comes a report that a Franco-Japanese agreement has been reached for the Vichy and Tokyo governments, permitting restricted Nipponese use of the French possessions for a drive against the Chinese province of Yunnan.
And such is this morning's news of European development, just analyzed by Linton Wells from New York, reported earlier from London by Larry Lester, and from Berlin by Edwin Hartridge. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.